Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 1, the first step in God realization. Text 12. Please repeat. Kim.
Kim.
Pramatasya.
Pramatasya.
Bahubi.
Bahubi.
Parokshayi.
Parokshayi.
Hayanayi.
Hayanayi.
Iha.
Iha.
Varam.
Varam.
Mahurtam.
Mahurtam.
Viditam.
Viditam.
Gatate.
Gatate.
Shreyase.
Shreyase.
Yata.
Yata.
Try to listen and repeat. Kim pramattasya bahubi.
Kim pramattasya bahubi.
Prokshair hayanair iha.
Prokshair hayanair iha.
Param muhurtam viditam.
Param muhurtam viditam.
Gatate shayase yata.
Gatate shayase yata.
Kim pramattasya bahubi.
Kim pramattasya bahubi.
Parokshair hayanair iha.
Parokshair hayanair iha.
Varam muhurtam viditam.
Varam muhurtam viditam.
Gatate shayase yata.
Gatate shayase yata.
Kim.
Kim.
What is.
What is.
Pramatasya.
Pramatasya.
Of the bewildered.
Of the bewildered.
Bahubi.
Bahubi.
By many.
By many.
Parokshayi.
Parokshayi.
Inexperienced.
Inexperienced.
Hayanayi.
Hayanayi.
Years.
Years.
Iha.
Iha.
In this world.
In this world.
Varam.
Varam.
Better.
Better.
Muhurtam.
Muhurtam.
A moment.
A moment.
Viditam.
Viditam.
Conscious.
Conscious.
Gatate.
Gatate.
One can try for.
One can try for.
Shreyase.
Shreyase.
In the matter of the supreme interest.
In the matter of the supreme interest.
Yataha.
Yataha.
By that.
By that.
Translation. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest. Please repeat. What is the value of a prolonged life?
What is the value of a prolonged life?
Which is wasted.
Which is wasted.
Inexperienced by years in this world.
Inexperienced by years in this world.
Better a moment of full consciousness.
Better a moment. knowing the whole consciousness.
Because that gives one a start.
Because that gives one a start.
In searching after his supreme interest.
In searching after his supreme interest.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Shukadev Goswami instructed Maharaj Parikshit about the importance of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord by every progressive person. In order to encourage the king, who had only 7 remaining days of life, Srila Shukadev Goswami asserted that there is no use in living hundreds of years without any knowledge of the problems of life. Better to live for a moment with full consciousness of the supreme interest to be fulfilled. The supreme interest of life is eternal, with full knowledge and bliss. Those who are bewildered by the external features of the material world and are engaged in the animal propensities of the eat, drink, and be merry type of life are simply wasting their lives by the unseen passing away of valuable years. We should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success. And the easiest possible procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. So the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is that we are not the body, but are the soul within the body. Those of you who have been coming to the satsangs have heard the statement, we are not the body, we are the soul within the body. The soul is eternal and the body is temporary. And our real success, our real happiness, lies not in relation to the temporary body, but in relation to the eternal soul. So, people who have been reading the Bhagavad Gita and attending satsangs have heard what I just said many times and perhaps have said the same thing. But there is a difference between theoretical knowledge and practical experience. When we examine our lives, our days and nights and months and years, how much time is really spent on the body, and how much time is spent on the interest of the soul? And we will probably find that we spend a lot of time on the body, maintaining the body, pampering the body, preserving the body. So many things. And in this way, the valuable time of our life is imperceptibly slipping through our fingers like sand. So, apart from spiritual knowledge, I should say theoretical knowledge, we need practical experience. And this verse tells us that one moment of consciousness is worth more than a prolonged life of inexperience. Now this phrase, inexperienced by years, means that just by experiencing something, you may not learn from it. When I grew up, there was not a joke, but a saying about people who don't learn from experience, that the person has had, you know, 1 year of experience 10 times. That means in 10 years he still hasn't learned. And Srila Prabhupada gave a nice definition of experience. He said that good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. But even that is not automatic. That implies that we learn from our mistakes. As I said, failure is the pillar of success if we learn from our mistakes. So this verse is telling us that one moment of actual realization is worth more than many years wasted. And we have to put ourselves in a position where we can have a moment of realization. There are many statements about the value of chanting even one holy name of the Lord. That just by chanting the holy name of the Lord once, one is freed from the reactions to more sins than he can commit. That is true. But, as Srila Prabhupada says, there is also a question of the quality of the chanting. But if one can chant the holy name once with sincere feeling and surrender to Krishna, to the holy name, which is Krishna, one's life can change completely. Now we may chant the holy name many times every day, which is very good. We should. But we want to chant one name or one mantra with real attention and consciousness. Bhuritan Prabhu, our learned and experienced God brother. It says that he remembers very well the first time he heard the holy name. He had been an initiated devotee for 2 years. And he remembers very clearly the first time he actually heard the holy name. He'd been chanting 16 rounds a day for years. And finally, he heard the holy name. And when you actually hear the holy name, it is a different experience. The things that we read about the holy name in the scriptures are about the process of Krishna consciousness in the scriptures comes to life. So when we chant, we should let go of all other thoughts and considerations and focus exclusively on the holy name. One mantra. Because you can chant only one mantra at a time. So when you chant, just focus on the one mantra that you're chanting at the present moment. Don't think about, I have to chant so many rounds. Because you can't chant so many rounds. You can only chant one mantra. And then the next mantra. And then the next mantra. You can only chant one mantra. So there's no use thinking about so many rounds you have to chant. Just chant one mantra. And if you find that your mind has wandered, just gently bring it back to the mantra. Don't lament about the mantras that you didn't hear, because they're gone. You can't bring them back. And don't think about all the mantras you're gonna try to hear in the future, because you can only hear one at a time. So just focus on one mantra. Just try to hear one mantra. And understand that when we chant, we are engaging with Krishna. Sometimes we might think of chanting as a process, and in a way, it is a process. But more than a process, in its real essence, it is a relationship. It is our relationship with Krishna. And we are in the material world because we have turned away from Krishna. We have come here to try to enjoy in imitation of Krishna or in competition with Krishna. And when we realize that we cannot be happy trying to imitate God or take the place of God, and we realize that we have turned away from Krishna, who is our best friend and well-wisher, and we actually regret our having turned away from him, and we want to rectify our relationship with him. The first thing we can do, the best thing we can do, is to make the effort to chant the holy name with attention. So it is really our relationship with Krishna, specifically in the form of the holy name, that we are trying to develop. And if we just spend time with Krishna in the form of the holy name, and try to chant the holy name with attention, Krishna will appreciate it. Even if we're not completely successful, we won't be completely successful. Even if we're not moderately successful. But just the fact that we have set aside this time to be with Krishna, to try to revive our relationship with Krishna, will please Krishna. Any relationship takes time. It takes an investment of time. And our relationship with Krishna does as well. And specifically time with him in the form of the holy name. And the scriptures and the deities. But we're talking about the holy name, because that is what Srimad Bhagavatam says. That is the best process. Not just Srimad Bhagavatam, all the scriptures say. So, we should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success. And the easiest possible procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. In the previous verse, we have discussed this point to a certain extent, and we may further be enlightened on the different types of offenses committed unto the feet of the holy name. So this is very important, to spend time, but to spend the time in the best way. Sometimes it happens that there's difficulty in a relationship. And one problem may be that the couple doesn't spend enough time together. Each one is busy in his or her own affairs. So then they decide that they will spend time together. Actually, one godbrother of mine told me a study was conducted, and the two words that fill a husband with the greatest fear and anxiety. Can you guess? What are the two words which if his wife utters, will fill him with complete fear and anxiety. Close. Let's talk. As soon as he hears those words, let's talk, he doesn't know what's coming. You know, it could be anything. So, okay, so they decide, okay, we're going to spend some time together and talk. But sometimes, due to false ego and material conditioning, it doesn't go well. Sometimes it gets worse. And it's because I'm making an analogy here to the holy name, but it's also a practical fact that the couple did not enter into the discussion in the proper consciousness. Perhaps each one thought, you know, I'm right, and the other one is wrong. And, you know, the purpose of this conversation is for me to show that I'm right and the other person is wrong. And when both parties enter the conversation with the same idea, I'm right and the other one is wrong, and that all the problems could be solved if the other person just understood me and did what I wanted the other person to do, there is a, as they say, formula for disaster. Formula for disaster. And it happens because of false ego. And so we know we should chant the holy name. The scriptures tell us, and the devotees do it. So we feel we should do it. But if we come with our false ego, that actually I'm the supreme, then it's not going to go too well. But still, if one perseveres in chanting, eventually it will have some effect. But really, we should chant in the proper frame of mind. Just like when we enter a conversation with someone, we should enter in the proper frame of mind. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has quoted many passages from authentic scriptures and has ably supported the statements in the matter of offenses at the feet of the holy name. From the Vishnu Yamala Tantra, Srila Jiva Goswami has proven that one can be liberated from the effects of all sins simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. So this chanting, I actually have a god sister named Archana Siddhi, who she and her husband together counsel devotees. And she herself has very deep realizations about the value of good japa. She was initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and she was chanting for many years. But when she attended her first japa retreat and really got a sense of what it means to chant japa properly, it changed her life. You know, she said that, say, in the 2 years after the japa retreat, she felt she made more advancement than in the 20 years before the japa retreat. So it's really a matter of the quality of the chant. And if we chant in that way, we can feel that we are being relieved of sinful reactions. There are different stages of sinful reactions, and one part of a sinful reaction is the seed to commit further sins. And that is also eradicated by proper chanting, and then you feel relieved of sorrows and miseries. Material desires. Quoting from the Markandeya Purana, Sri Goswamiji says that one should neither blaspheme the devotee of the Lord nor indulge in hearing others who are engaged in belittling a devotee of the Lord. A devotee should try to restrict the vilifier by cutting out his tongue. And being unable to do so, probably we would feel ourselves unable to cut out the tongue of a blasphemer of devotees. So there is an alternative. A devotee should try to restrict the vilifier by cutting out his tongue. But being unable to do so, one should commit suicide. Rather than hear the blaspheming of the devotee of the Lord. Now, how do we understand this statement? Well, without going into detail, we should understand that it's very harmful to hear blasphemy of the devotee. Not only to speak it, but to hear it as well. And we'll just leave it at that. But I want to mention here that some criticism of devotees is done in a very casual way. We get together, we don't even think about it, and we start to criticize. And that is very debilitating. And when one starts to chant japa seriously, one feels the effects of it, and then one avoids it at all costs. One just doesn't want to bring that type of disturbance into one's japa, which really means into one's relationship with Krishna. Because Krishna is not pleased when we criticize devotees. And especially we have so many faults of our own. We should rather work on improving ourselves. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, speaking of the mind, has said that in the morning one should beat the mind, in the morning and evening. And so what does that mean? He himself explained that it means that you should chastise your mind, because the mind will tell you that you are better than others. Others are worse than you. So when your mind tells you that untruth, you should hit it with a broomstick. So that is, we're in the material world because of the envy of Krishna. And that envy comes out in relation to other people, including devotees. But it's ultimately envy of Krishna. Some devotee will, and usually devotees react more in the field in which they are themselves making efforts. For example, if someone says, so-and-so is a really good cook, you know, she made the best meal. Doesn't bother me because I'm not a cook. If someone says, you know, so-and-so Maharaj gave a really good class, what do you mean? I can speak better than him. What do you mean he gave a really good class? You must not have heard me speak. So it hits us when it pertains to our field. So, but ultimately, it's envy. We don't want to admit the good quality in another person. We don't want to admit that Krishna has endowed that person with some good quality or ability or mercy. So we have to work on this, and these things come up when we chant. The chanting is like it shines a spotlight on your mind. You see all the stuff that's going on in your mind, and then you, but it can cleanse it, Chaito Darpana Marjanam. But you have to want to cleanse it. Otherwise, it's like, oh, this is too much. Let's turn out the light. I don't like seeing all these things. It's happier when it's dark. So, one area in which there can be that sort of casual criticism or fault finding is in the family, because we don't see each other as devotees. Oh, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my son, this is my daughter, this is my mother, this is my father. That's true, those relationships are there. But if they're devotees, if they're making the effort to chant the holy name, then we have to respect them as devotees and serve them as devotees. We hear about serving devotees, respecting devotees, appreciating devotees, encouraging devotees. We should have that attitude at home with our family members who are devotees. Actually, that's the main thing, that they're devotees. They happen to be our family members, but the main thing, they're devotees. So it's a little difficult because of that bodily relationship. But as we progress, the spiritual aspect of the relationship will become more prominent and the bodily aspect will become less so.
And that is ideal. Then our relationship would be very harmonious with Krishna in the center. And Archana Siddhi, and this isn't just some theory, but she's actually found in her practical experience of counseling devotees and couples that when they spend time working on their japa, especially together, if their relationship changes. It helps their consciousness. Because we're always struggling with the three modes of nature. You know about the three modes of nature? Who can tell me what the three modes of nature are? Yes?
Goodness, passion,
and what are the symptoms of goodness? What are the symptoms of passion? And what are the symptoms of ignorance?
Symptoms of goodness is when you preach the Lord and other demigods.
Okay, well, anyway, you got it right. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. You have heard the truth and you have repeated it. That is perfect. So now going a little deeper, who can say in one or two words what characterizes goodness? Let's start with goodness. We won't ask for all three. Let's just start with one.
Somebody who is peaceful. Remind you that peace. Being in present. Charity.
Well, it's illumination. The mode of goodness is the mode of illumination. When you're in the mode of goodness, things become illuminated. Things become clear. And what other people have said is true. Those you will be peaceful, definitely. You will be peaceful and charitable, and those things will come. But basically, it's the mode of illumination. And what about passion? What's the main characteristic of
passion?
Intense hankering. Yeah, intense hankering, desire. And like frantic efforts to fulfill one's desires. And ignorance? Yes, laziness, darkness, laziness, intoxication, what Mataji said, delusion, daydreaming. Sorry?
What is the one word like you mentioned, like for hankering, you know, for passion, is it that?
Yeah, darkness. But it's laziness, being intoxicated. So, there's always this competition. And we all have the experience, you know, sometimes we're in better form than in other times. Usually, like if we're in ignorance, we're at our worst. A little better than that is passion, but better than that is goodness. So, if we want to have a conversation with someone, as far as possible, we want to be in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, if we're like too passionate, it won't work. Just the other day, I heard of a couple, and there was a big explosion. And it's one of those things. Without going into the details, the husband packed his bags and left the house. So anyway, some eventually came back, but they weren't talking. And in a way, it was good, because they were both too heated up. They had to wait till they cooled down a little before they could talk. So we want to be, you know, we don't want to be like too much in passion and ignorance in our relationships, because it will really lead to the conflicts. So apart from that, you can say the spiritual benefit of chanting together and having one's consciousness elevated in relation to Krishna in the process of chanting, it also elevates the couple's consciousness for when they deal with each other. You know, without all that passion and ignorance, when they deal with each other, it's much more congenial. Much more congenial. So it's practical. And so, same thing when we chant. I mean, that's the basic idea, that we chant in proper consciousness and we don't commit offenses. We don't say things or do things, not just when we're chanting, but at any time that would affect our relationship with Krishna, which in turn will affect our chanting, our relationship with the Holy Name, when we chant. And of course, the other side is that if someone offends us, we shouldn't take it too seriously. Once one disciple said to Srila Prabhupada that because offending devotees has a particular remedy, which is that you approach the devotee and ask the devotee for forgiveness. So one disciple said to Srila Prabhupada that if I had to do that every time I offended a devotee, I would be spending my whole day apologizing and offering obeisances to devotees. I wouldn't have time to do anything else. And Srila Prabhupada said that in the morning program, now that's another thing, the morning program, but in the morning program, after Mangalarati, all the devotees offer obeisances to each other, and they recite the Vaishnava Pranam Mantra, Vanchakalpa Truvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patitana Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. And that is meant to, you know, cleanse the effects of those little incidental offenses committed during the day, just by our social interaction. But still, we should try to avoid criticism of devotees. And anyway, try to see the devotees in their true essence as servants of Guru and Krishna, and not just, you know, in terms of our bhakti relationship. The conclusion is that one should neither hear nor allow vilification of a devotee of the Lord. As far as distinguishing the Lord's holy name from the names of the demigods, the revealed scriptures, Bhagavad Gita 10.41, disclose that all extraordinarily powerful beings are but parts and parcels of the supreme energetic Lord Krishna. Except for the Lord himself, everyone is subordinate. No one is independent of the Lord. So, this is also an offense to consider the demigods to be equal to or independent of Lord Krishna. People coming in Hindu families may find that their parents and grandparents worshipped demigods, and they may also take up that, continue that. And of course, there's an incident in Srimad Bhagavatam that teaches us that Lord Krishna does not approve of demigod worship. Who can tell me what that incident is? You don't have to describe it, but just in one...
Narendra Govardhan.
Yes, Govardhan. Correct. It was a tradition that the cowherd community would offer sacrifice to Indra. And one year, Lord Krishna said, this is not what Lord Krishna said, this is an aside. I wish I had $1 for every minute that people in this room have spent on their iPhones and smartphones. I would be a very rich sannyasi. So, coming back to Lord Krishna and Indra, Lord Krishna said to his father, "What is this ritual? Is it some tradition, or is there actually some benefit?" In other words, we shouldn't just do things out of tradition, there should be some benefit. And then there was some discussion, and in the end, Nanda Maharaj and the others, they agreed, and they stopped the Indra Yajna. And then, instead of the Indra Yajna, they had Govardhan's puja. And Indra became angry, and of course, generally, demigods don't do that. They're happy if someone worships Krishna. But the same thing, false ego, pride, envy. So he was afflicted by those, but Krishna protected the residents of Vrindavan. And they did not suffer at all. And in the process, Indra was rectified. So the purport is that there's no reason to worship demigods. There's no need to worship demigods. And even if it's been a family tradition, like the Indra Yajna was a family tradition, it's not necessary to maintain it. The demigods are devotees of Krishna, and we can see them as devotees of Krishna. But if we think that, oh, you know, if I just surrender to Krishna, you know, Durga Ma will get angry and I'll be in trouble, and I'll lose the blessings of Ganesh, and what will happen? Well, that's lack of faith. That's lack of faith, and bhakti begins with faith, ado shraddha. And what is that faith? That faith is defined as the firm confidence that just by discharging devotional service to Krishna, one will get everything. It's just like when you water the root of a tree, all the different limbs and branches and leaves are watered. There's a process. You know. When you feed the stomach, all the limbs of the body are nourished. You can say, well, there are like 9 holes in the bigger ones, eyes, ears, nose. We can put the food in any hole. Well, it must go in the mouth. That's the scientific method. So similarly, it's not that we can offer service to any demigod or devi, but to Krishna. And the Govardhan Lila was significant because Indra was proud and envious. It needed to be rectified. But otherwise, in principle, the demigods, they are devotees of Krishna. They want people to worship Krishna. They're actually happy if you do. Except for the Lord himself, everyone is subordinate. No one is independent of the Lord. Since no one is more powerful than or equal to the energy of the Supreme Lord, no one's name can be as powerful as that of the Lord. By chanting the Lord's holy name, one can derive all the stipulated energy synchronized from all sources. Therefore, one should not equalize the supreme holy name of the Lord with any other name. It could be anywhere, but there are many examples from America and every country. But when I first went to India, not immediately, but within the first few years, there was a very popular Hindi film called Jai Santoshi Ma. And after that film came out, different temples to Santoshi Ma started to spring up in different places, villages, and towns. And later I heard that Santoshi Ma doesn't really exist. She was just made up for the film. But when people saw it, they got, oh, we can get these blessings, and then they started making temples to Santoshi Ma. So we have to be like serious. You know, we have to go by authorized scriptures, not just sentiment. Hare Krishna. The powerful holy name of the Lord can certainly deliver one from sinful effects, but one who desires to utilize this transcendental potency of the holy name of the Lord in one's sinister activities is the most degraded person in the world. Such persons are never excused by the Lord or by any agent of the Lord. One should therefore utilize one's life in glorifying the Lord by all means without any offense. Such activity of life, even for a moment, is never to be compared to a prolonged life of ignorance. Like the lives of the trees and other living entities who may live for thousands of years without prosecuting spiritual advancement. Hare Krishna. So one moment, just takes one moment. In fact, the very next verse, I had that thought, it's in the very next verse. The saintly King Katvanga, after being informed that the duration of his life would be only a moment more, at once freed himself from all material activities and took shelter of the supreme safety, the personality of Godhead. So we can surrender in a moment. And that moment is what we want. And that surrender is, it can be done in other ways, but because our common activity, the most essential activity, especially for initiated devotees or those who want to be initiated, is the chanting of the holy name, chanting of japa. So we should try to make each mantra, that mantra that I'm actually going to hear, I'm actually going to surrender. And then the next. But not now. Not the next one now. The present one now. Then the next one. And it will have wonderful effects. And it will be beneficial, and it's, yeah, things will be illuminated. As the Bhagavad Gita says, you get transcendental knowledge and it illuminates everything. Like the world is illuminated when the sun rises and the darkness is dispelled. Then things become clear who we are, who Krishna is, who my wife really is, and who my husband really is, and our children, and our parents, and the devotees in the temple, and the parampara, and Gauranga, and Radha and Krishna, everything is illuminated. And then, like in the dark, you just stumble around, you might bump into a wall, you might stub your toe, you might trip and fall over. You're in a helpless position. You're in darkness. We want light. When things are illuminated by the holy name, by Krishna consciousness, and we can see, we can move, we can interact, and we can be successful. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, you said that we have, when we surrender to the name at that moment, that's when we attain Krishna consciousness, or we attain perfection. But in order to be able to surrender to that level, one has to have a lot of faith.
Yes, yes.
And then this, the Maharaj you mentioned, Katvang Maharaj, in one moment he came to know that he was, that was going to be the last moment, and he was able to surrender. So, how could he surrender so easily without having faith? And if he had faith, he would have already surrendered.
Well, sometimes under pressure, like they give the example, a diamond is actually coal, carbon. And when the coal is under pressure, it can crumble or it can become a diamond. So when we hear that we have only one moment to live or 7 days to live, that puts some pressure on us. And under that pressure, we can surrender, become like a diamond. Some people crumble, but the devotee won't crumble, he'll become a diamond. Any other questions or comments?
A very nice instruction on Japa book, but we didn't travel about 1 month.
Yes.
So he said that when the 1 month just touches the consciousness, so sweet and simple. There is a tendency, I've been trying that, but there's a tendency that
yeah.
The mind goes.
Yeah. Yes, Gurijan Prabhu says that when the consciousness touches the holy name, it's an extraordinary experience. So that, like that turning away from Krishna that brought us in the material world and keeps us in the material world, that gets reenacted in our japa. You know, we pick up our beads, we want to focus on the holy name, on Krishna. And then out of habit, we turn away from Krishna again. So we should repent. You know, it's a relationship. You should repent. I'm sorry. And, chant the names of the Panchatattva and try again. But that's a very good book, Japa, by Bhurijan Das. Did you read the whole book? Did you see how blissful he is? Smiling. That's the effect. You smile a lot too. There could be other causes. What's the cause of your smiling?
I don't know what else I do. I don't know. I smile. I have typical questions.
Because you associate a lot with flowers.
That helps.
It says flowers are the smile of the Lord. So that's.
To tell you the truth, Maharaj, that whether a devotee is initiated or not initiated, they do come across with fulfilling the 16 rounds, okay. But somehow get initiated, and I have a friend of mine who comes to temple, and I ask him that you are doing so much service for me. You look like you are a pure devotee, so are you initiated? He said, no, Guruji. I said, why? I have problem in completing the 16 rounds. I said, I don't know. I tell you that everybody has problem, but if you get initiated, maybe because of the mercy of your spiritual master, you will enhance your. So my question is, what do you think? Is that a charity?
He says that he knows a devotee who seems to be a nice devotee, but he's not initiated. And he asked him why he's not initiated. And he said he can't be initiated because he doesn't chant 16 rounds. So Amarendra Prabhu said, well, if you're initiated, then you might get some special mercy and then you'll be able to chant 16 rounds. Well, the general process is that one should chant 16 rounds for some time before initiation. Now, there is a critical question here, which is whether your friend has a relationship with a senior devotee, you know, like a spiritual master. Because the mercy doesn't have to wait for the initiation. The mercy can come before the initiation. And the guru, and I don't mean just one, but the guru, the Vaishnav, can help you come to the stage of 16 rounds. So I think that's the question. So he's not initiated. He could be initiated when he comes to the standard. But to get to the standard, it might help him if he had some, you know, relationship with some senior devotee who could help him come to the standard. So you could ask him. Any other questions or comments?
My question is, how do we inspire children to chant? Like, normally children have a tendency to sit in a theater or do theater, dance, sitting, reducing, or the family sitting in one place to chant. I find it difficult.
Well, I have heard different, parents who I consider to be successful give different explanations of how they were successful. And one such couple is Shesha Prabhu and his wife Madhumati in Palachua. They visited me in Santa Barbara with their two daughters. And their daughters were quite Krishna conscious. And they were sort of late teenagers then, which is can be a challenging time. They were quite Krishna conscious. So he asked the parents, and the parents said that they never told their daughters to do anything. But they themselves did everything. They either went to the morning program in the temple or they had a morning program at home. They would invite devotees and sannyasis to visit the house, they would serve them. The parents would serve them. And by seeing the activities of the parents and how happy the parents were and how nicely the parents related to each other and how nicely the parents related to the children, they themselves were inspired on their own. And I think, I know at least one of them's initiated, the other, maybe they're both initiated. So that was what they said. Another time, we had a couple, a very, very nice couple. The husband, young couple, the husband's parents were devotees and the wife's parents were devotees. And they were very nice devotees. So we asked them, you know, how did you end up like this? And, you know, and they both said that their parents never forced them. And they really appreciated the fact that their parents never forced them. But at the same time, both pairs of parents were very strong devotees on their own. And, I mean, this could be going a bit off track, but I know the one mother was an excellent cook. And I joked when that young man was you know, sort of getting of marriageable age, that, you know, it's going to be very hard for you to move away from home because your mother is such a good cook. I didn't even say it would be hard for him to find a wife who could cook like his mother, because I didn't even think it was possible. So I just said, it's going to be very hard for you to move away live with your wife, because your mother is such a good cook. And 2 years later, he was engaged, and I went to visit them, and the construction was going on for the addition to the house. So that he and his wife could... So, yeah. Yeah. I might really be old-fashioned, and a lot of my experience was in India, and like a little while ago, but good cooking on the part of the wife is a very important factor. In South Africa, there are a lot of families of Indian origin. And there's one place, Port Elizabeth and Utenhe, where they were really good cooks. And devotees would visit there, and they'd always have these fantastic feasts. So I asked the wife, and I was staying there at the house, I asked her where she learned to cook. She said she learned from her mother and grandmother. I said, at what age? She said, I started late. I was 7. Yeah, really they should start younger. That's what she said. Something like that. And then just a little after that, within a week, I went to Johannesburg. And I visited a couple. And they were elderly couple. And I didn't even bring it up, but they're talking about the sort of the system of marriage and how the boy's parents would come and visit the household to see what background the girl came from. And, you know, one of the big things was the meal. And that lady, a grandmother, elderly lady, she was saying how in the old days the girls would learn to cook from a very young age. And consequently, they became very good cooks. And that was very good for their marriages. And she felt that a lot of problems came because now, some parents, they don't even want their daughters to cook. They want them to study so they can get a career. But for the marriage, it's a factor. It really is a factor. So, I seem to have struck a chord.
No, you're telling the practical.
Yeah. So, anyway. So that's what those young people said. They appreciated it, that their parents didn't force them, that their parents gave them the choice. But at the same time, their parents were exemplary in Krishna conscious and in their relationship with each other. I mean, yeah, ideally or something. They're very cooperative and affectionate to the children. So I think it's possible. But again, it was a little different time and a little different culture. Not that, but, you know, maybe 10 years ago, South Africa. But I think these are general principles. Like Vatadvaja Swami always says that the children in the movement are born into the movement, but they haven't joined. You know, it's up to them to decide to join or not. And so that should sort of be our, it's the same thing. See them as devotees or potential devotees. You know, plus you do have to assert your authority as a parent. It's like when, after Nimai took birth, who knows who Nimai is? Yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after Nimai was born, an astrologer came to the house and did the calculations for Nimai. And he said that in his past life, your son was a cowherd. And because of his pious activity in taking care of the cows, now he's taken birth in a Brahmin family. And then he read further, you know, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so you have to be very careful, you know, with how you deal with him. And Jagannath Misra replied, you know, he may be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I'm sure he is, but still he's my son. And if he does something wrong, I have to protect him. So I think like that we can see these great souls who've taken birth in our families as great souls, but still with their parents. And if they do something wrong, we have to correct them. Hare Krishna. And the children should obey. That's their duty.